You are the master of your reality. This is even more true in relation to the government. Democracy doesn't just happen. It takes participation. Governments need participation and feedback from their citizens. Join Rob Hutchinson for Dear Parliament, where you get to understand the issues and engage directly with government. Dear Parliament is every Wednesday at midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Dear Parliament right here on High FM. It's been a while, about 2 weeks, but once again, if you've missed any previous issues or previous episodes, feel free to catch up with them on the High FM website. That's www.chaifm.com. And yeah, a rather interesting week in Parliament. Once again, when is it not an interesting week? I don't know. It's always something going on. This week, I think today is the day the budget gets voted on by the National Council of Provinces. It's already gone through the National Assembly. National Assembly, interesting enough, are in recess, on holiday. Well, it's not supposed to be a holiday. Supposed to be a time of attending to their constituencies. But do they do that, or do they just take a holiday? Well, we'll never know. Only parties can report back on what the constituency work is for each one, and so it shall be. But as I was saying, it's budget time this week. The budget will be approved and taken forward. If it's not approved, it has to go back to the National Assembly for discussion once again. And there's quite a few interesting things happening within the budget. Most of them are more around the appropriation bill, which is also signed today. So the appropriation bill determines where the funds are distributed amongst all government institutions, state-owned entities, and so on. And that should be quite interesting to see who gets how much. Over the past 3 weeks, each department has been presenting their internal budget to National Assembly and to Parliament, and a vote is taken on each one to see whether it should go through. So things should all happen today. Of course, then if budgets aren't significant or aren't enough for each department, they have an opportunity in around October, November to actually ask for more. And yeah, that should be quite interesting. One interesting thing that did happen this week is the Register of Members' Interests was released. So what the Member Register is where each Member of Parliament has to declare their financial interests. Obviously, this is a good thing. It promotes transparency, and it's made available to the public. In fact, it has been published. If you search on the internet, I'm sure you can find it. In fact, I'll post it later onto the WhatsApp group, and anybody can download it if they so want to. That'll be actually a good idea. But then there, you can go through it. You can see each member's declared interests, their investments, their properties, and so on, which I think comes at just at the right time. I mean, there was a media article not too long ago about one of our ministers who seems to have declared interests in, I can actually say the name, Deputy President Paul Mashatile. So Deputy President, he declared a 28.9 million rand home in Constantia in Cape Town. And that is registered under his son-in-law's company. Well, that's rather interesting. Now, why would it be registered under his son-in-law's company? And why did he declare it? Well, the Hawks are investigating the source of the funds, which were used for the purchase, cash purchase, of course, 28.9 million rand, just lying around, buy a home in Constantia. And so we'll find out what that is. But I encourage you to go through the declared interests file. It's quite a hefty document, a PDF of quite a few hundred pages, but well worth it. And then let us know your views on on the Chai FM WhatsApp group, which it will be there pretty soon. On other things happening, well, as I mentioned, the budget is on its way. I don't know if many people know how much the budget actually is. It's about 1.2 trillion rand, excluding a few contingencies and other funds. Each department, as I said, has declared their budget themselves. And the interesting thing about the budget is that it's up to Parliament to monitor each ministry and budget allocation to make sure that they don't underspend on their budget. They have to spend it all. And if they don't, it's a gross neglect. They declare the budget, they ask for how much they need, and therefore they have to spend it on that. So does that promote corruption? What if they've over-budgeted? What happens then? But that's up to Parliament and the oversight committees to make sure that all happens properly. So not much else happening in Parliament other than a few issues with our trade agreements with the US. That's still ongoing. South Africa has presented some options. I don't know if the US will take that into consideration, though, but who knows? There'll be a 30% tariff on all South African goods imported into the US. But to chat with us more on that and other forms of currency and trading, once again, Kieran Ryan joins us in studio. How are you today, Kieran?
I'm great, Rob. Are you hearing me okay?
100%.
Okay, yeah. And how are you doing?
Good, as always. I cannot complain. Well, I complain far too much, I think. So rather keep quiet. There's only an hour in the show. But yes, I don't have enough time. Yeah. And how are things going, Kieran? We were talking off air about alternative forms of currency and so on. And remember last show, we actually thought that would be a great idea to actually educate our listeners into the various forms of, I want to say crypto, but it's not quite crypto. It's other things. It's not Bitcoin. It's something else. Even our South African Reserve Bank does promote a form of cryptocurrency more for internal trading and so on, but nonetheless it is a crypto, and they have been talking about releasing that into the South African market. But I am no expert on this in any way whatsoever, so I'm going to be doing a lot of listening, no doubt a lot of listening for the next hour or so, and throwing in some questions which might seem ignorant, but as I said, it's going to be a learning show today. Anything else that you got in your mind, Kieran, that we want to get off before we head off to an ad break?
Well, I mean, just on the tariff front, I think things are getting quite hot there, because there's a lot of attention in the US administration on South Africa. I don't know if you're aware that there was a high-level delegation of Afrikaners who went to the White House basically to brief Trump and not Trump directly, but some of his advisors, and J.D. Vance, who is the deputy president, about the situation in South Africa. And they came away with basically four bullet points that the U.S. government wants to normalize relations with South Africa. One of them is that there would be no BEE requirements for American companies. Another one would be that the ANC has got to come out with a very clear and unambiguous condemnation of the statement or the slogan, kill the Boer, kill the farmer. And there are a few others which we can discuss a little bit later.
Well, that's really interesting. I think the BEE thing is going to get things rolling across all sectors, which is a brilliant, 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 brilliant idea. But before we get into that, got to do the usual thing of making sure that everyone is healthy, and you're looking healthy. I'm feeling good.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
Indeed, democracy doesn't just happen. It takes hard work, which is why, again, I encourage you to read the latest members' interests that have been published. Kieran, so again, welcome to the show once again. And we were chatting briefly. You touched on the four bullet points that the US has set for the SA trade relations. Of course, the BEE thing is necessary. It's been going on for quite a while, with Trump making some noise, and I think AfriForum playing a good role in that, and Kiel de Boer as well. That was another one. What else have they put forward or proposed?
Yeah, so I mentioned that the U.S. businesses want to be exempted from BEE requirements. That's a tricky one because, you know, in terms of our law and our constitution, you know, law has general applicability. So you don't have exemptions for certain companies or certain nationalities. How they get around that one, I don't know. But I think the line in the sand there is the new Employment Equity Act, which a lot of businesses are absolutely furious about, because that's going to dictate the complete racial makeup of your business. And Saka Lecha has been doing quite a lot of promotion on this, explaining the likely outcome of this. For example, it applies to businesses with 50 or more employees. So if you're a family-owned business and you've been running fine all this time, you may have a BEE component or you maybe don't. But now, in terms of the Employment Equity Act, you're going to have to, if you've got more than 50 employees, and it's got to reflect the racial demographics and the gender demographics of the country. Now, this is complicated for a number of different reasons. I mean, first of all, you basically, business, it's a completely communistic kind of approach where the state is now your partner in your business and is dictating to you who you can employ. This is going to run into all sorts of legal problems. Already is. It's being challenged in the courts. I frankly think this is this line in the sand. I think for business, they finally decided, you know, we can't go along with this. We're not going to put up with it. And I see this thing rolling out for years before it gets resolved. And, you know, what many businesses would like to see is scrap it. Just get away with it. We have no room in this country, when we're trying to promote growth, to be introducing something that is going to be so damaging to the future of business. So I think that's one thing. And the U.S. administration was briefed on this. And so they want to be exempted from BEE requirements. They want farm attacks to be classified as a priority crime. They don't believe this is just not run-of-the-mill crime that is happening in the country. This is something special because of the brutality, and there was evidence presented to them on that. They don't want any land expropriation without compensation. Nice. And as I mentioned before, an unequivocal condemnation by the ANC of the Kill the Boer, Kill the Farmer slogan. So those are the four points before normalization with South Africa, normalization of relations. Of course, this was relayed by high-level Afrikaners who went to the White House, and there's been a lot of pushback and blowback on that. But these business organizations that were there are holding firm, and they say, you know, South Africa is going down the wrong road, and we need to put pressure. And if it's external pressure, so be it. It's got to happen.
Yeah, well, I say it's about time. It's been 30 years now where BEE has been detrimental to the country's economy, and as you said, detrimental to the growth of South Africa. So I'm glad there's pressure coming from outside South Africa's border, and it's significant pressure, because the US really holds the key to South Africa's growth. If they cancel agreements or refuse to trade with South Africa, it's going to cause a major problem and a significant increase in South Africa's living costs. I think inflation will go through the roof. I think the rand will tank. I think it'll just be absolutely terrible. So the question is, will our government adhere to this? Do you think Ramaphosa and whoever makes the other decisions will actually stick to it, or will ideology once again trump logic?
Well, there's a lot of tough talk coming out of Cape Town at the moment. You know, we're not going to be bullied, and you're hearing this all over the world. But just look what happened last week. You know, the European Union caved completely to Trump's pressure. Most countries around the world are doing exactly the same. If you want to have good trade relations with the United States, there are terms and conditions for that. South Africa is not a powerful player in the world. We account for less than 1% of global GDP. We used to be 1%. We're about half of that now. And, you know, we do need access to the United States markets. I'm just looking at some of the stats here. So 30% tariffs have been imposed generally on South Africa. The sectors that are going to feel the pain most are cars. We used to export cars to the US at 0%. Now they're at 25%. Steel and aluminium, now 50%, was previously 25% for steel and 10% for aluminium. Agricultural products, we used to get that in free into the United States. South African wines used to go in duty-free into the United States, now going in at 30%. So that's going to hurt. That's really going to hurt. Because they're going to be sold for 30% more, presumably, in the United States when you've got competing wines from Chile and Spain and other places that probably will be as good quality and cheaper.
If not, so yeah.
This is a problem.
I think steel might be the biggest problem for South Africa. The steel industry is already on shaky ground, and China taking over considerably there, it's just going to pave the way for the death of South Africa's steel industry totally, which is a great pity. I think it was one of the biggest industries previously. I think it was Mittal that used to run most of the steel in South Africa way back 20 years ago. One of the biggest companies in South Africa, now struggling to keep above water, and that's a major blow. So in my opinion, I think that'll be a travesty, and that alone will cause a demise. Because once the steel industry collapses, I think all the subsidiaries around that will also take a knock. That's really something for our president and decision makers to consider. They have put a proposal together. I haven't read through it in its entirety as yet, but it does contain some interesting things. I don't think they quite meet the demands of the US, but perhaps there'll be talks and then negotiations in the future to maybe come to some sort of agreement there. But yeah, what kind of tariffs is the US putting on China relative to the South African tariffs?
They were talking about 50%, but I think that is open to is the subject of negotiation at the moment. So, but China's holding firm. And I think that they are in a much more powerful position because they are the leading manufacturing powerhouse in the world. And they said, you know, US only accounts for about 15% of our trade. We're prepared to tough this one out. But they're busy with negotiations this week on a final settlement.
We'll have to keep a close eye on that. But all this talk about finances and billions and trillions and negotiating and trade deals just brings me back down to crypto. How do I make money on crypto, Kieran? Is it possible? I've tried. I'll admit I've tried. And I failed miserably, losing a significant amount of money.
And really?
Yeah.
What did you invest in?
Out. I don't know. It was Bitcoin. Yeah, okay. I invested in Bitcoin and then trade. I must admit, in about 2012, 2013, I ran some events and some people wanted to pay by Bitcoin. I was like, well, what are you talking about? This is not even real money. But anyway, give it to me. And they ended up with that 1.2 Bitcoin or somewhere around there, which was, I thought, oh, yeah, it's great. You know, but then you spend it online, early days, it means nothing. And now I'm looking back and kicking myself. What is the value of a Bitcoin?
Well, that's exactly, that 1.2 Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin today is trading at 2.1 million rand, or about $118,000. So, yeah, I know it's painful to look back at these things. You know, a lot of the guys who got early into Bitcoin came into being 2009, and people were mining these things. You mine them on computers. It's basically you're solving mathematical puzzles. You get rewarded in Bitcoin for that. Mm. And I knew a guy who had 60 Bitcoin and, you know, acquired them at like $6 or $7 at that time. And then, you know, it went up to $15. This is, my God, I've hit the honeypot. And he sold out his 60 Bitcoin, you know, $15. And here we are today at 118,000. There are so many stories like that. I mean, I got into it.
Hang on. So 60 Bitcoin. What did you say in South African rands? 2.1 million.
2.1 million. So he'd be worth, you know, 120 million. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you imagine how that feels?
No, it must burn. It must burn. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. And other people bought in 2017 when the price was rocketing up. And then, of course, in 2018, it collapsed. It went down 70%. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're sitting watching a stock on the stock market go down 70%, you kind of want to get out at a certain point. I held through that crash. I have seen through, you know, massive drops like that. So I'm prepared to take the pain. Because I don't sell, I just hold. You know, it's a long term thing. Oh. And it was my son that got me into it. You know, when he was first buying Bitcoin, and he paid, I don't know, 25,000 rand or something. I said, "What on earth are you doing? How do you know you've got anything for that?" And you know, all you do is you wait a few hours. It gets verified. It goes through, you know, certain verifications, and you get a piece of code, and it sits there in a wallet and says, "Yep, you've got so much Bitcoin." And there you are. So, you know, how do you make money from Bitcoin? Well, you know, the crypto is doing pretty well. Bitcoin is doing pretty well this year and last year as well. There is a method called dollar cost average where you put in a little bit every month, regardless of price. So the best thing to do is not pay attention to the price. And, you know, if it's 500 Rand or 1,000 Rand, just buy regularly. This is not financial advice, but I do advise people to get a little bit of Bitcoin just so they get interested in it and watch it. However, that's not the entirety of the crypto market. I think it is the original one, but there have been many others. Ethereum, Solana, Cardano, all of these different ones came in, and they're all doing pretty well at the moment.
Why? Why are they doing well? How does it work? What are they based on?
Well, the mothership is Bitcoin. When Bitcoin goes up, everything else not Bitcoin is called altcoins, alternative coins. Mm. And there are thousands of them. Most of them are pure junk. They are really just rubbish. They're scams. They're all kinds of things. They're people promoting coins. You know, even Donald Trump, you know, his coin did pretty well. They call it a meme coin. So it doesn't really have any intrinsic value. It's just a fun thing like Doge, which Elon Musk was promoting. Mm. And you could say the same, you know, about the Rand. What is the Rand backed? Well, the Rand is backed by the South African government.
Right.
If you want to go into that, the value of the Rand has plummeted by more than 90% since 1960.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can remember that back in the 80s, you know, a rand was equal to a dollar.
Yeah.
And stronger.
I remember traveling to the UK, and then I can remember it exactly. It was 5 rand 26 to the pound.
Wow.
And I thought, no, I can't do this. This is too much money. I'm going to lose so much. It's too expensive. Now look at it. What's it now? 2023. But I also remember when the rand was actually stronger than the dollar, and some people said no, the rand is overvalued. But I mean, how can it be overvalued? Currency used to be based on gold standards, not so. Yeah. So if the gold price of gold went up, the currency increased in value, and so on. It had actually something substantial to back it up on. That was dropped in the US first, I think.
It was dropped under Richard Nixon in 1971.
Yeah.
up in the post-World War II, you had what was called the Bretton Woods Agreement. That's when you got all these institutions that were formed, like the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. And part of the Bretton Woods Agreement was that the United States dollar would be pegged to gold at the rate of $35 an ounce. And that pegged, the other currencies were not pegged directly to gold, but they were pegged to the U.S. dollar. So there was an indirect relationship between gold and those currencies. And then under Harold Wilson in the United Kingdom in the 1960s, the government spending was getting out of control. They could no longer maintain that peg. So they devalued, the government itself devalued the currency, the pound. Yeah. And in 1971, Richard Nixon, same thing in the United States. They were coming out of the Vietnam War. They were spending huge amounts of money on that war. They could not maintain that peg, because every dollar issued had to have a certain amount of gold. They were forced to buy and stock gold. Mm. Couldn't do it anymore. So they then we entered the era of free floating currencies. And that's what we still have today. And free, if you look, you know, even the rand against the dollar, I said it's gone down more than 90% since 1960. Mm. The dollar itself, since the formation of the Federal Reserve Bank in 1913, has gone down 97%.
Wow.
So we are depreciating against a very depreciating currency itself. And we can get into that, you know, this. A few solutions which have come out of the crypto space, which are very interesting.
Oh, wow. I'm always looking forward to solutions to that. And hopefully listeners will get some ideas on how to increase personal wealth as well. That would be absolutely wonderful.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
So, Kieran, let's get a little less cryptic and tell our listeners on how to make money and how to increase their investments. How do we go about this? These couple of tricks that you're talking about that can improve the rand, let us know more.
Well, one of the things that is come out of the crypto space is a thing called a stable coin. And a stable coin is backed by real world assets. So there are a couple of US dollar pegged stable coins, one of them being Tether. Another one is USDC, which is issued by a company called Circle, recently listed on the New York Stock Exchange, or NASDAQ, I think. The interesting thing about a stable coin is that it's not under any Reserve Bank control. And what Africans have discovered is that if you're sitting in Nigeria and you're dealing with the Naira, which depreciated by, I believe it was close to 40% last year, or the Malawian Kwacha, which went down 26% last year. Just imagine, you know, you saved up and you've been working your whole life and you've got some pension fund, which is denominated in Naira or Kwacha. And you're just seeing your pension money evaporate. It's just melting away. Now, what you can do is you can switch that into a US dollar stablecoin, which is pegged one-to-one with an actual US dollar. And most people are using Tether. Tether is a remarkable story. It, in the last 5 years, has grown from nothing to a total value of $162 billion. It's now doing more volumes than Visa or MasterCard. And Africans have woken up to this and they realize, you know, I don't have to save in Kwacha or Rand. I can switch into a US dollar stablecoin. And you can hold that in an electronic wallet, which is outside of the banking system, is outside of the control of the central bank, the Reserve Bank. So you, in effect, become your own bank. And how do you store it? Well, most of these exchanges that you have will, you know, you open up an electronic wallet, you store it in there. And they generally charge nothing for that. Or you have these, they talk about self-custody. You know, you put it on something like a flash drive and you store it there. I don't advise that for people who are new to this, because it's quite technically complex and there's a lot of work got to be done to make that a bit of a smoother process. But if you have an account with Luno or with Valor, these crypto exchanges in South Africa, you can store US dollar stable coins. And that protects you against the depreciation of the rand and these other currencies that you see around you. But there's a little bit of a bug in the system here, and that is central banks realized what's happening in the world of crypto, and they said, we better get on top of this. We better issue our own digital currency, which they call a central bank digital currency, or a CBDC. And this South Africa's Reserve Bank is looking at it. The Europeans are looking at it. The Australians are about to launch one. The problem that you have with CBDCs is people have a lot of fears about this, because you will suddenly find maybe the government doesn't like the way you're spending your money. Everything becomes trackable. Everything becomes traceable. So let's say, you know, you're spending money on a political party that you favor, and the government doesn't like that. There's ways, theoretically, that they can curtail your spending. And this is actually programmable money. These CBDCs are programmable, meaning that you can be prevented from spending in certain shops in certain ways. Can't spend on pornography. Not that I would advise that anyway, but you know, people might want to do that and be prevented from doing that. And the other thing is, it can also be made to expire. This is very alarming. Now, they're all saying that they're going to respect privacy and they're not going to do any funny stuff behind the scenes, but I tend to be a little bit suspicious about any promises made by governments who are probably not going to be around in 3 or 4 years' time. Who comes after them? Who enforces these laws? Once they're in place, they're there for a reason. Programmable money can expire within, you don't spend it within 3 months, you lose it.
Wow.
Now, that cuts right to the heart of what actually is money. Money is a representation of energy and labor that you have expended and earned. And if the government can make it expire, well, then your energy and your labor has no value, or it's got temporary value. And that is a violation of the actual definition of money. So CBDCs, I'm not in favor of. There's been slow progress. The other big problem that they're facing is these are going to be controlled by central banks, and there's a fear that they could be hacked and they could be interfered with. This is something you read about all the time in the crypto space, where these crypto exchanges get hacked. Bitcoin itself, by the way, never been hacked. Do we got to separate out here? What is an exchange? Bitcoin itself, and the reason it's never been hacked is, if you're going to try and hack it, you've got to hack simultaneously tens of thousands of computers that are mining Bitcoin. And
the whole blockchain idea.
And and it's never been successfully done. It's been tried, tried repeatedly, just fails. It gets kicked out. There's a fear that with quantum computing that maybe it would succeed. But, you know, the smart guys at Bitcoin is not a company, it's a community, already, you know, 10 steps ahead of that. And they have got solutions in store for that. I'm very much a big proponent of Bitcoin. I do think it's probably the best money that we've got. Not easy to spend at the moment, but there's a lot of technology being developed around that to make it easier to spend.
Let's chat about that for a while. It's all well and great having a fantastic Bitcoin or Tether balance, but what can you actually do with that money? Do you cash it in when you want to sell it off? Where does that money go? Or can you use a card at certain retailers? Or what is the process?
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
Okay, Kieran, here's the big question again. If I still had my 1.2 Bitcoin, oh man, I wish I did. If I still had it, how would I go about spending it? And is there a tax implication?
Yeah, there is tax implications. The normal tax rules apply if you're holding for the long term, and you know you've held it for more than about 5 years. By the way, this is not tax advice. You got to go to a specialist on this. But I'm giving you the broad outline of what my understanding of it is. That you would pay capital gains tax if you've held it for a sufficient period of time. if you are trading and making profits, you're going in the market, and then a month later you go out, you make a little bit of profit, you would pay tax at your marginal income tax rate. So there's that difference there. So how would you spend it? Well, you can do that in a number of ways. There are a lot of merchants in South Africa. You can go to Pick n Pay, and every Pick n Pay store in the country will accept Bitcoin.
I did not know that. That is fantastic. Yeah.
And
how do I pay for it? That is it.
Oh, you would have you would have a wallet on your phone, and you would just hold it up to a device in the store, and they would deduct the amount from your Bitcoin wallet.
Oh wow! Like I said, it's normal like iPay services or something on your phone. Just hold your phone there. Ba-doop. Exactly the same thing. Oh, wow!
Exactly the same thing. Yeah. And there are a lot of merchants around the country now starting to become Bitcoin enabled. How this all started, and just going back to stable coins, initially people wanted, they were interested in Bitcoin. They were buying, and then, Bitcoin was very volatile. It would go up 100% and then down 50% and sometimes down 70%. It was all over the place. People wanted to switch into something that was stable, like the US dollar, without having to leave the crypto space, or what they call the crypto rails, because it's much cheaper. As soon as you now go back into your bank account, what we call fiat, F-I-A-T, you're now re-entering the ancient medieval world of traditional money. There are a lot of costs involved in that, so that they could swallow, 1.5-2% of that. However, if you stay in the crypto space, and stablecoin is in the crypto space, your costs are minimal. They're a fraction of a percent. So, excuse me. That's why stablecoins came about. But people have now found there's a whole lot of other uses for it. If you've got Bitcoin or a US dollar stablecoin like Tether, and you want to buy products in Pakistan or China or wherever, you first of all find out, do you have a US dollar stablecoin wallet that I can pay you with? And the guy says, no, I do not. Can you please pay into my bank account? Mm-hmm. You say, yes, I can do that, but that's probably going to cost you anywhere up to 3-4%.
Right.
And it might take 2 weeks, because if you've ever done an international transfer from South Africa, sending money abroad, You got this thing called the BOP list. So you go there and they say, BOP stands for balance of payments. Why are you sending the money out? You go say, well, it's a gift for my children. It's an export or whatever it is. And there's about 50 or more of these categories. You get that wrong, you can add another week to delay to the transfer of money. Whereas you do it with crypto, but there's a challenge there too. You send it to the wrong address. With crypto, you can lose it. So you got to be very careful when you're copying addresses. It's the same with a bank account, really. If you were to send me money or I send you money, I got to get your bank account right. And, what is the code and all of that kind of thing. Same thing in the crypto space. But it is opening up a world of opportunity in South Africa. And now you can earn yield. You can earn 8-10% on US dollars, which is pretty much, the Johannesburg Stock Exchange has delivered a return of 11% a year for the last decade. Yeah. When you're earning 8-10% on your US dollar stable coins, you're not far behind. And that's cash that you can cash that out at any time. And you accumulate interest by the hour.
By the hour. Well, there we go. That's fantastic. And it's not an annual interest rate. It's an hourly interest rate, which is fantastic.
Yeah. And just to make clear, I'm not giving any financial advice here. I'm just really trying to inform you about what's available out there. But I do, the one bit of advice is, buy a tiny little bit of Bitcoin and start watching it. 100 rands worth.
Well, there you have it, listeners. Start with a little, maybe your rewards will be great. And I'm pretty sure they will be. Given the rate of decline in the South African rand and other currencies, as we have mentioned, I think this might be an opportunity to get something done. But unfortunately, we've come to the end of the Dear Parliament show today. If you missed anything, feel free to catch up on on our website at www.highfm.com. Download any episodes, take a listen, and catch up with all the news. Kieran, it's been wonderful as usual. I'm going to text you after this and make an investment and get some more advice. Put my $100 in and let's go. But thanks, Kieran. Always good to have you on. And listeners, thanks very much. And always remember to stay democratically engaged, active, and responsible. Ciao for now.